is back here on the Boston Man Show with Paul Mills of the Oral Roberts Golden Eagles. They're 5-5 right now, 2-0 in Summit League play. Coach, how's life, man, out there at Oral Roberts right now?
Well, I think in a coach's life, it all depends on what happens last. So if you lost in your last time out, you're probably not in a very good mood. And then if you won, you're probably in a better mood. And so, fortunately, the last two times out on the road, we've been able to be on the right side of the scoreboard. And so it's good. And you're just focused on, hey, how do we get better? And let's make sure we go 1-0 the next time we're out. And depending upon how that game goes, we'll hit the reset button and we'll try to go 1-0 again. So I think it's just constantly moving it, trying to be 1-0. So today I'm just trying to win today. We need a good practice in order to prepare for this weekend.
Most definitely. And I was going to ask you about that, Coach. You know, you guys have played 10 games. You know, my buddy at Siena, Carmen Mazzarello, has only played like a few games, you know. So how is it, you know, with you guys, man, having been played 10 games, being blessed to be able to have that many in already, and playing some games for money as well, and getting to raise some money for the school as well, because other schools can't even get games. And, you know, so how is it blessed you and your staff are for your players to be able to get in 10 games? This COVID year is going to be weird all year long.
Yeah, you know, November 25th, the opening date for college basketball, when they moved it back, I mean, it wasn't until about a minute before tip-off that I realized, like, wow, this is actually going to happen. And even though that we had made the trip to play Missouri, a very good Missouri team, and you were just – there's just so many uncertainties that, you know, I just thought, like, right before the tip, something would happen and it would get canceled. And so the whole idea of being able to play in the COVID era, as I shared with our guys, what you do realize is it is such a privilege to play. And you know, that the opportunity to play, the privilege to play, I do think that we have a very mature team. And because we have a very mature team, they've been able to handle things. Not that teams who've had an influx of COVID issues aren't mature, but for most of our guys, we had a number of COVID issues, parents in ICU for several of our players. Obviously, what's going on throughout the country, a number of our players' families, members lost jobs. And so I think as all this began to unfold in June and July, you know, we were so conscientious about just let's do the right thing. You know, we could do the right thing and COVID could still impact us, but let's try our best to do the right thing, because it was so personal to see family members in ICU. Fortunately, none of our players lost any of their family members, but I mean, there were days and weeks where it was touch and go, and fortunately family members, but they've also seen the financial devastation up close. And so you do realize it's a privilege to play as you're going through a global pandemic, and we can't take this stuff for granted.
Coach, went to my birthday, which is March 11th, when I was at the Hawks and the Knicks game. I got the text that it's getting suspended. And the 12th, everything is shut down. So how was it for your staff going back to my birthday in March and saying, going from being on campus, being with you guys, to being at home, going virtual, and trying to keep the grades up at home in that new at-home environment and trying to learn? I know, Coach, I couldn't do virtual learning. I would suck at that, you know? So how was that for your guys and your staff, man, losing your players for all those months with no contact, seeing them face-to-face? Now that everything would be Zoom and virtual stuff then.
Yeah, March 11th was a Wednesday, and I can remember that, you know, as going through it, you had your situation. And then, you know, here in Oklahoma City was when Rudy Gobert and the Utah Jazz were at Oklahoma City. And it began to go down and you begin to see it. We were actually preparing for postseason. We had a postseason invite. And so we had the guys around. And then by the time Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I began to meet with the players. And I said, you know what, in all likelihood, we are not going to see y'all again, and we need to send you guys home. You need to take your books. And so I can remember being with several of them on that Sunday and having meetings with them once we realized we were going to have to cancel postseason. And I think going through it, our guys did a phenomenal job in the spring semester, had over a 3.3 GPA, but you were so conscientious about just everything that's going on. And when this began to roll out, nobody knew anything, right?
Yep.
We didn't know if we touched something, if we got COVID. We didn't know if we stood by somebody and they breathed on us. We didn't know how all this played out. And so, I mean, if you remember, nobody could even find toilet paper.
Yes.
During, you know, and it was just a mad rush towards, you know, and as we look back now, you know, was it a little, were we way just over the top? Did we realize some things? And then you realize, like, man, this is a respiratory disease that impacts a number of people, but we really have to protect our vulnerable people over the ages of 65. And we have to be so conscientious about what happens there. And I think as more information just begin to come out, we begin to take the attitude of how do we help our neighbors? Like, you know what, for high level athletes, yes, if you get touched by this, it may be minimal. It may have maybe more than. And so we need to make sure that we get you with the heart doctors. But we just really tried to instill in our guys, how can we help our neighbor? And then obviously you had the influx of politics and then George Floyd this summer. And then it really became about, man, how do you help your guys? You know, how can you serve your guys during this time, knowing all of the racial animosity that's going on in a political year? And so we just became so conscientious, and I think our players will tell you this, just about, hey, you know what? Our job is to love one another, and love means giving. So we need to give of ourselves. We need to give of our time. We need to give of our efforts. And so I don't think it's been easy by any stretch of the imagination, but what I do think it's done is it's stretched our players and it stretched our staff as people in order to kind of, let's get outside of ourselves and let's find a ways to love others through our energy, through our time, through our giving. Let's do those things. And I think that's what this, you know, last, what's now going 9 months has really done for our basketball team.
And Coach, same here with my staff. I've seen myself since my party. I had a party on March 14th, Coach. I know I shouldn't have did it, but I had a party on March 14th. That's the last time we was all together and out. But I told them, hey, let's use it here to adapt, overcome, and conquer and grow as people. Because for me, yeah. Coach, using this radio show, man, I never talked about life issues, what I did with Joe after George Floyd and Ahmaud Arbery, Jacob Blake. I never talk about politics on my show or anything political on my show. But the moment was like, hey, as a black man living in Atlanta, I have to speak on this, you know, and not sweep it on the rug anymore, you know. So, and Coach, yeah. I'll ask with you, I lost the sponsors because I spoke the truth about how life is for me here in Atlanta as a young black male in my 30s. But I feel like it was for the right cause. I was giving back to my listeners who need to hear, who might not understand where my life experience is, you know, so they can kind of get a, might not understand it fully, but get a snapshot of what JR deals with when he's off the radio. Now, say if I'm not at the arena covering the game, I go back to being JR, young black male in Atlanta, not just JR the radio host.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think, you know, that was where I think one of the things that came forward this summer is I think people begin to listen, you know, people who may come from a different demographic and a different socioeconomic situation. People said, you know what, man, we never understood that. And you know, I grew up in inner city Houston. And so, you know, basketball is kind of the sport of the poor in America. In Europe and in Africa, it's soccer. In basketball or in America, it's basketball. I didn't have the money to afford a helmet and cleats. I couldn't afford a baseball bat and a glove. But I could run down to the end of the street and play with 12, 15 other kids and with one ball. And so, you know, you were aware of some of the socioeconomic issues that were occurring. I don't know that a lot of people are. And so just to have the opportunity to listen during the course of this summer, George Floyd was from the same area I was. He went to Yates High School there in Third Ward, Houston. And so I probably was in a gym. We're around the same age as him at the same time. And you just became so conscientious. And I think everybody was just sickened by that entire event. And I think what it allowed people to do was, one, vent, right? And people were allowed to share their frustration. But the second part was people, to some degree, I think when they were conscientious, began to just listen instead of debate. Hey, that's your experience? Like, man, you know what? You shouldn't feel that way about this situation or that situation if you ever find it in. And so I do think that what it brought about was a number of people who became empathetic and began to listen and understand better issues that may not necessarily be in their direct home, but became wider about some of the diverse things that people experience.
And Coach, the email responses I've gotten since June of people who say I had no idea, JR. I mean, of course you would, because I wouldn't share it on the radio unless it was.
Yeah.
I wouldn't just openly tell you that I grew up poor, you know, and I grew up on free lunch. I grew up on Medicaid and Medicare. I'm just gonna tell you that, just because, right? You know, so this moment allowed me to share with my listeners my true life story and tell them that hey, I came from nothing. So getting a master's degree and having my radio show platform and working around the NBA, the NFL, and MLB. I mean, I'm a great story on that it happened in this country. Yeah. So unless this happened, I never would have shared with my listeners my true life story.
And I think what it does is it obviously, you know, people are attracted to stories and people are attracted to the whole idea of, man, listen to their situation, better understand them, and then you get a better idea about the empathy that we all need to have about everybody's situation. People at the end of the day want to feel valued, and the way that you value people is you listen. And again, I thought that's what this summer allowed those who were sensitive to it to do.
And Coach, I'm asking this, man, and as your young men grew from this, as you talked about it on Zoom, how was those Zoom calls, man, when your guys shared their experiences with you around the team and how those open forums? I feel like for me, Coach, the open forums I've had on Zooms with different teams this year and other coaches had me to come speak was great, because seeing guys be open and being vulnerable to share, because a lot of times guys are kind of tight and they don't want to really share, they want to be macho, but seeing guys really let the guard down and say, this is who I am was really, for me, really refreshing, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, and we had a number of them, you know, as I mentioned to our players, if all we're doing is talking about a 12-ounce rubber ball, we're failing you guys. A 12-ounce rubber ball isn't doing much for your life. And so we had a number of guys. I thought one of the guys who did a phenomenal job and provided a great perspective was Clark Kellogg with CBS Sports. Clark was a really good basketball player, but his dad and his granddad were in the middle of riots that he remembers vividly because they were in the police unit. And he could talk about the experience that they had just as Black officers and going through the summer. And then also the platform that the media presents. And so just, hey, how do you navigate this world of, man, I have something to say, but maybe I'm too young. I have something to say, but people don't listen to me because I only average 2 points a game. And to just kind of share with them that, you know what, your voice is important and we all have a role to play here. And you need to understand that you're supported on this end. And so I think that was the biggest thing that we tried to get across to our guys is one, you're supported. And two, we all have a role to play. And there's a way to go about this the right way. And we wanted to invest in our guys with a number of people visiting with them from a perspective of where it was historical and they could learn and hopefully they benefited from it.
And Coach, you know, what's so amazing about this is as a coach that, you know, these young men are getting prepared for life because, you know, you're in your 40s, I'm in my 30s, they're in their early 20s. Life's going to hit you with a curveball or a fastball where you don't see it coming. And they got a life 101 experience kind of in a big way about how life is, you know, how you think it's all good and, oh, yeah, and boom, life hits you. So 2020, you taught your young men, a lot of young men in college basketball, a lesson for the rest of their lives going forward.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, the more that you can invest in your players about things that are going to translate well beyond the game, you know, your willingness to serve others. You know, the only way you're going to be able to serve others is if they trust you. Well, you know what? How do you earn people's trust? You have to give great effort. You have to have great resiliency. You have to have the right attitude, right? If you have a bad attitude, people will duck off in bathrooms to hide from being
Yes.
around you. But if you have the right attitude and a good attitude, people will flock to you. And so I think all of these things that allow for teams to be good basketball teams, these intangibles, you see them play out in their everyday life, in their everyday world. And we're constantly trying to reinforce those things. One, we're trying to model them. And then two, we're trying to make sure that we reinforce them. But you do realize you don't now, but you will as you get older, the value, you know, as I share with our guys, if you're going to quit on that play and you're not going to fight for your teammates, how do I know that you're not going to one day quit on your wife? How do I know that you're not one day going to quit on your children? And so I'm not going to let you quit on a play, because there's much bigger things that we don't need to quit on. So let's make sure we give great attention to the smallest details in order that we don't let this mentality seep into us.
Now, Coach, speaking of details, how was it to kind of prepare for the season? You know, putting stuff in, ramping guys up to prevent that injury at Nags all year long, because you're not going to imagine trying to put it in offense and defense when you can't be everybody on the court at the same time trying to get guys the workouts without getting them sick as well. So how was that process trying to put install and get guys ramped up to play the way you all played 10 games so far?
Yeah, I mean, one, we were able to start practice a little bit earlier than normal, so that helped. And then, you know, we had two starters returning, one in Max Asemus, the other in Kevin O'Banner. Both of them are top 25 in the country in scoring right now. And so we're the only team in the country to have two guys, multiple guys in top 25 in scoring. So they were the two returners. So they were kind of our experienced guys. But trying to get the other guys, even though we had returning Letterman, acclimated, it's new, right? Some guys may not be familiar with the terminology. And then you have the COVID interruptions, right? Back in August and September, it was, if somebody got COVID, you were done for 2 weeks. So I can remember we'd practice a day, done for 2 weeks, practice another day, done for 2 weeks. And so, I mean, there were just all of these interruptions. So we tried to utilize as much film as possible. We tried to utilize as much individuals as possible, since we couldn't be together as a team. And, you know, give a huge credit to the strength staff here at ORU. Ashton Mirpool did a phenomenal job. And then our coaching staff, Sam Patterson, Solomon Bozeman, Russell Springman, did phenomenal work in just helping our guys. And then we tried to get together via Zoom and film and talk through these. But it's not easy, but the truth is we weren't the only ones doing it. Everybody was in this boat.
Most definitely, Coach. And I'm gonna ask you about somebody you know good well, Matt Driscoll. Tell us about Coach Matt Driscoll, man. He's a good buddy of mine as well, a guy from Baylor as well, that tree. So tell us about your time with him, man.
Yeah, I love that guy. Matt Driscoll, obviously he's the all-time winningest coach at the University of North Florida. And you talk about a guy who you're attracted to because of his attitude. That's him. In all honesty, our first few years at Baylor, we weren't very good. And we would go until about 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. We'd work and be in the office and go, and we'd be back in by 8 a.m. And that wasn't like a 6-day-a-week thing. That was an everyday deal. And we did that for pretty much our first 4 years. 3 a.m. to, and then everybody was back at 8. Coach Drew didn't make us do that, but Matt Driscoll was the guy everybody was trying to beat. He was an energizer bunny. I was younger and I'm like, man, I'm going to stay longer than Coach Driscoll. I'm going to get here earlier than, and I couldn't do it as much as I wanted to. And just, you know, the competitiveness in you comes out and you're like, I'm going to outwork that guy. And you're like, okay, you know what? He's just built different. I cannot outwork that guy. Now, he runs on about 900 cups of Dunkin' Donuts.
Yes.
Every single day. And so he has some fuel that the rest of us don't necessarily have. But who he is as a man, who he is as a dad, his son, Chase Driscoll, was a GA for us last year, and he's an assistant coach now in Florida. And Paxton Driscoll, they used to babysit my children when my kids were young, he and his wife Carrie. But you just talk about phenomenal people. That's who Coach Driscoll is. And those kids at UNF are so fortunate to have a man like that pour into them and invest. I know he just got his best player back, from what I understand. And so he'll do phenomenal work as they fight for an Atlantic Sun first place trophy this year.
Yeah, he's a favorite of mine. Talks on the show, man. He's always energetic, man. I say, hey, coach, it's your show, man.
Yeah, that's a different level of energy.
Do your thing.
And he's always been that way. He has not changed.
Hey, coach, I thought I had energy, but hey, when he comes on the show, he has more than I do. I'm like, okay, yeah. Hey, coach, I can't beat you, man. You've got all the energy in the world, man. And I'm 33.
Ask him one question, and then you don't really have to do any more of your show. Because he'll take off.
Hey, I laughed so I had him on the show the other week. Four questions. It was all.
that's you got 45 minutes worth of material right there.
Even better. 54 minutes, actually. Even better than that. 54 minutes. Hey, I said, Coach Driscoll, you lucky that I own my show. Now I don't have no hard outs, because if I had a hard out, I don't know what I would do.
Yeah, you definitely have to splice it.
Yes, indeed. Well, Coach Mills, thank you for your time today, as always. Much love to you and your staff and your players. Be healthy, be safe. We'll talk to you real soon now.
Boss, man, thanks for all you do, brother.
Inside, Coach. Be good now.
Bye-bye.